Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is the Soundcheck Podcast.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This month, we've been stepping into the Soundcheck time machine and setting the controls for the summer of 1994. As part of our look back at the music of that summer 20 years ago, Chris Melanfi joins us to look at something called modern rock. Chris is a pop chart analyst and contributor to NPR Music, Slate, and a frequent guest on Soundcheck. Welcome back, Chris.
Thanks so much, John. Great to be here.
Modern rock. When was rock not modern?
Yeah, right. Yeah, if ever there was a generic industry term that kind of took off, it's that one. Modern rock was a term that was bandied about in the 1980s. And it's a term that Billboard magazine settled on in 1988 for the name of their first ever, let's call it alternative music chart or post-new wave chart. Mm-hmm. They started a chart in the fall of 88 that they called Modern Rock Tracks. Its first number one was a song by Susie and the Banshees called Peekaboo. What was fascinating about this chart was that it was a chart for acts that didn't chart.
And didn't have any expressed interest in being on the Billboard charts.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, think of all the what we consider post-punk or new wave bands, goth of the 80s. And finally, they had a chart to call their own. Everybody from, Morrissey to The Cure to New Order to, again, Susie and the Banshees, they suddenly had a chart that they would peak in the top 10 or even number one on.
Right. So Susie Sue could actually say, I have a number one song.
Exactly. There were even older acts like Lou Reed or John Lydon who had number one hits on this chart. So, yeah.
So it became, it would eventually become what we called alternative rock in
the
90s.
That's right.
And since we're talking most specifically about the summer of 94,
yep.
So this is 6 years after Billboard has created this chart.
Uh-huh.
And this seems to be kind of a high watermark for modern rock as a quote-unquote format.
That's right. I mean, let's think about where we're at in the summer of 1994. So, you know, the Nevermind breakthrough of Nirvana happens in the fall of 1991, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this kind of two-year wave of grunge bands, 92, 93, Pearl Jam breakthrough, Soundgarden breakthrough, Smashing Pumpkins, if you can attribute them. They're mm-hmm. a Chicago band, but they were sort of dragged in with the grunge movement. All of these bands, Alice in Chains, Score, their first radio hits thanks to the wake of grunge and what Nevermind had wrought. And then, the spring of 94, Kurt Cobain takes his own life. And we're now in the, if you will, post-Cobain era. And I think there's kind of a tidy formulation where some people think, well, you know, when Kurt died, that was the end. But it really wasn't the end. It was kind of almost the beginning of the next wave. For the next couple of years, 94, 95, 96, that was honestly the peak of alternative or modern rock as a format. It dominated the radio. So much so that here in New York City, if you flipped on a top 40 station like, say, Z100, which is the highest ranked top 40 station in the country, you wouldn't just hear Madonna or Bon Jovi. You would hear Hole in the Middle of the Day. You would hear Veruca Salt. You would hear these bands getting played on top 40 radio.
You'd hear Boys to Men, but then you'd also hear songs like this. Listen to this little montage of some modern rock hits of the summer of 94.
Black Hole Sun, won't you come? Wash away the rain, black old sun. Won't you come? Won't you come? Won't you come?
Peel me off this Velcro seat and get me moving. I sure as hell can't do it.
That's the Cranberries with their song Zombie. Before that, Green Day with Longview, and a little bit of Soundgarden's Black Hole Sun. Some modern rock classics from the period of the rise of modern rock, both as a Billboard format and, Chris, as a radio format. You mentioned Z100 here in New York, but, you know, these songs began to be picked up by other radio stations as well, and modern rock became a kind of alternative radio format in many markets.
That's right. I called it, in one piece that I wrote for Pitchfork last year, our bastard top 40. That's essentially what it became. It's as if these bands, some of which, you know, predated the alternative or modern rock era, suddenly got dragged into the spotlight. Let's take an example. You know, a band mentioned by Kurt Cobain in his last celebrated performance, MTV Unplugged, the Meat Puppets. Mm-hmm. When that live performance was recorded in late 1993, the Meat Puppets had been around for a decade, recording great albums like Meat Puppets 2. And
nobody knew them.
Effectively, nobody knew them, right? Like, hip people knew them. Nobody in the middle of America or you know, anybody who listened to Top 40 radio knew them. By the spring-summer of 1994, they have a top 10 rock hit, number 11 on the modern rock charts called Backwater, and it was everywhere. I even recall hearing it on Top 40 radio stations.
Some things will never change. They stand there looking backwards, half unconscious from the pain. They may seem rearranged in the backwater swirling.
Meat Puppets, a song called Backwater. Chris Melanfi, pop chart analyst, contributor to NPR Music, Slate, and frequent guest on Soundcheck, talking us through some of the quote-unquote modern rock, a radio format that reached its peak in the mid-90s, including that summer of 94. You mentioned Nirvana Unplugged, the famous kind of game-changing record that
Absolutely.
They did in late 93.
Right.
The Meat Puppets were actually part of the backing band along with the rest
totally.
Of Nirvana.
And Kurt did three Meat Puppets covers.
Yeah.
All fantastic songs during that.
Which also raises the kind of connection between quote-unquote modern rock and what we now call Americana,
right.
roots music, the unplugged thing, which begins with another great with another great modern rock band, and that is R.E.M. with Losing My Religion.
That's right. I mean, acoustic music was really starting to rise in the early 90s, and by 94, it was you know, omnipresent on the radio. You started to hear unplugged-style records like, say, Elderly Woman by Pearl Jam. You know, no drums on the record, essentially just acoustic guitar. Or think about a top 10 hit by an Australian band called Frente. It was a cover of the New Order, New Wave hit, Bizarre Love Triangle.
From the 80s.
From the 80s, yeah. Originally released on a 1986 New Order album. And it finally becomes a top 10 hit in America thanks to this Australian band kind of doing a quiet, delicate acoustic cover of it.
Every time I think of you, I get a shot right through into a bolt of blue. It's no problem of mine, but it's a problem I find. Living a life that I can't leave behind. There's no sense in telling me the wisdom of a fool won't set you free. But that's the way that it goes, and it's what nobody knows. And every day my confusion grows. Every time I see you falling, I get down on my knees and pray. I'm waiting for that final moment. You say the words that I can't say.
That's Frente, the Australian acoustic pop band, covering the New Order song Bizarre Love Triangle. Modern rock at work.
Right.
Chris Melanfi with me on Soundcheck, and as part of our look back at the summer of 94, Chris is talking about modern rock. There was the Billboard chart, there was the radio format,
right?
And what it did. I mean, you mentioned before that people were sort of getting sucked into, dragged into this format willy-nilly.
Mm-hmm.
It was making pop stars out of people who had no real business being pop stars, it seemed.
Right, and were sort of awkward fits for the top 40 radio to begin with. I mean, think about a guy like Trent Reznor, right? Think about Nine Inch Nails. This guy, for his time, is as hardcore as it gets. You know, he's a couple albums into his career. He sort of helped popularize what was once called techno, later became kind of the core of alternative and post-new wave rock. He's releasing songs like Closer, which has, you know, the dirtiest of dirty words in the chorus, and that's getting played on pop radio.
Well, censored.
Censored, yes, with the, you know, backward masking and swooshing, but yeah. So Nine Inch Nails with a huge hit in the summer of 1994.
Closer is the name of the song, Nine Inch Nails, and that was, Chris, all over the radio.
Absolutely.
Even needing editing, as it did.
I love how it practically has a disco beat. It's kind of like, you know, smashing two things against each other.
But it also, you know, it is not a friendly-sounding piece of music, you know?
I would call it catchy, but yes, it's atonal. It's certainly dark.
It's catchy, but it's also got this, the melody has this kind of queasy effect. You
totally.
Know,
to say nothing of the music video, which I think everybody remembers vividly, but directed by Mark Romanek, which is just, you know, filthy and yeah, dark.
Well, now, you know, not everybody jumped on the music video bandwagon. And we're talking about, you know, modern rock stars who became pop stars through this radio format,
right,
and didn't necessarily play along.
Right. A good example, obviously, and the peak of this is 1994, is Eddie Vedder. There's a guy who got very uncomfortable with his popularity. I mean, nobody was more uncomfortable with his popularity than Kurt Cobain, but I would say second on that list is Vedder of Pearl Jam. By the time they released their second album in late 1993, Versus, Vedder had decided, and in conjunction with the rest of the band, there would be no more music videos. They were done with that.
Well, they'd only done the one, right, for Jeremy.
They'd done a couple, actually. All of the Big Ten hits had videos, although you're right to think of only Jeremy, because Jeremy was really the only concept video. Mm. The others were basically live videos. Alive had a live video. Even Flow had a live video. They were done even with that. They weren't going to do any videos at all, nothing on MTV. So all of the songs that were big off of Versus, like Daughter, were not released with music videos, and it didn't matter. Pearl Jam were effectively the biggest band in America by the summer of 94, and they didn't need music videos. They were so huge that at the peak of summer 94, they had a song on the radio that was a B-side from their previous record, 10, a song called Yellow Ledbetter, that barely anybody can even make the lyrics out to, and that was a modern rock hit, and on Top 40 radio as well. So that's the way it was in 94. You didn't necessarily need to play the MTV game to score a hit.
Yellow Ledbetter from Pearl Jam. It was Eddie Vedder and company's idea not to play ball with MTV, not to play the industry game of releasing singles and promoting them as singles, and yet it happened anyway.
Exactly right.
So how influential did this modern rock thing, you know, once Billboard magazine created the modern rock chart, affixed mm-hmm. that name to it, it becomes the radio format, it peaks around 94, 95, 96. How influential does it remain post 90s.
I mean, it's extremely influential, but I'm afraid the influence is malign as much as anything because, you know, once you have the grunge bands, you have what come to be known as the post-grunge bands, your Creeds, your Matchbox 20s, your Third Eye Blinds. It kind of becomes a pigeonholable format like any other. After 94, when people see how many albums can be sold, I mean, think of a band like Green Day with Dookie. That's a 10 million selling record right there. And, you know, basically with these punk, post-punk, grunge sounds, it becomes a format that everybody starts piling into. And frankly, the format gets kind of overcrowded.
And so does it go the way of new wave music in the 80s where, you know, it almost becomes a pejorative term by the end of the 90s?
Well, I think the joke in the 90s, and certainly you heard it by 94, was alternative to what, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if it's supposed to be the alternative to the top 40 and it's getting played on top 40 radio and even the stations that are so-called alternative stations are drawing some of the highest ratings in their various cities, what is it an alternative to? It's a format like any other. The the format lives on, and to this day, this chart Billboard started is no longer called modern rock. It's now called alternative, and it still exists. But among music fans, yeah, I mean, the term alternative became a pejorative, and indie was picked up as the next phrase, a phrase that was sort of hiding in plain sight. Even indie eventually became a pejorative. So, you know, these cycles kind of go round and round.
Listeners, what's your history with modern rock, this Billboard and radio format of the early 90s? How did you find out about artists like the Cranberries and Green Day and Bush and Live and bands like that? Was it radio? Was it the Billboard charts? Was it a friend, a record store? Let us know by giving us a call at 866-939-1612 or leave a comment on our website, soundcheck.org. That number again, 866-939-1612. We might use your story on the air. Chris Melanfi, pop chart analyst, contributor to NPR Music and Slate, and frequently to Soundcheck as well. Thanks for the look back.
Anytime, John.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.